Welcome everyone to the School Free Life podcast. I have Becca and Sadi from Radical Learning joining me today, all the way from Oaxaca in Mexico. I'm so excited to chat to you guys. Everything you share is so inspiring. I'm sure everybody who is following along on their journey feels the same. Welcome to the School Free Life podcast. It's so nice to have you both here.
Thank
Thank
you for
you.
having us. Yeah, thank you for how could we not be on a podcast that is called the School Free Life podcast? When I saw it, I was like, why haven't we been on that one? Yeah, thank you for having us.
Oh, it's such an honor. It's just so wonderful to listen to other people's stories who are just doing their thing in all different parts of the world. I'd love it if you could introduce yourselves a little bit more and speak a little bit about your background, how you came to unschooling, and I guess what brought you to Mexico as well. I'm curious to hear about that.
Yeah. Do you want to start?
You could start if you want.
No. Because I started like earlier,
Yeah, you
or
did.
it's the age thing.
It is. You go first.
Okay, I'll go first. Okay, so my name is Becca. I was born in Sweden a long time ago. And yeah, clashed with the school system from a very young age. She decided to become a teacher to transform the system, failed miserably, burnt myself out. Short or long story, very much shortened. I decided to transform my life and moved to Mexico in 2003. And in 2005, my son was born after a very traumatic pregnancy. And when I finally could hold him in my arms, I realized that I would never be able to put him in an ordinary school, which led me to co-found the state of Oaxaca's first alternative school, who then turned into a Waldorf initiative. And a couple of years later, I founded the second one here on the coast, also Waldorf inspired. And that's when my son started elementary school. And it just didn't work. And so I was a little bit slow in understanding why. I got that he was neurodivergent. I understood that he was on the spectrum, but I still kind of had this idea that kids need to go to school, that I would never be able to teach my own kid in spite of being a teacher. But it just got worse. And when he was in fourth grade, it just collapsed completely. And when he turned 10 in December 2015, we decided to just ditch the whole thing and start unschooling instead. And so he went into his healing process of deschooling, and I decided to open up a learning center that was based upon the principles of self-directed education. And I didn't do it for him because I already knew that he wasn't like so interested in hanging out with other kids. But I did it more for me. And yeah, that has been our journey. He is a fabulous unschooler. He is just a free spirit that needs to do what he needs to do and basically has put me on the path of of unschooling and of living with life without school. And everything I do in my life, basically, yeah, I initiated it by being a school critic for like at a very early age and becoming a teacher. But that whole other track is really thanks to him. So yeah, that's a little bit of my story.
Yeah, you have so much to say. I feel like you could just have a podcast with Becca. She would
No.
have like
I
hours had so many
talking about
questions
her
just come up
story.
as you were speaking just
Yeah.
then. So I'm excited to get
Yeah,
into
keep
that.
that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm Sadi. I am, oh, where to begin? I was ironically, and this is something that connected both Beck and I, also was born in Sweden, but moved. My family were we are immigrants of the US, moved to New York when I was young, and is, I guess, a product of the New York City public school system. So I knew that system real well. I learned a few interesting skills from navigating that system. And I think what brought me to unschooling, I like to share this story, is I think it was really through my pregnancy and birth. We decided, well, when I got pregnant, it was like the first time that I was like, whoop, like put on the brakes, hold up, wait a minute. You all want me to do what? How? When? You know, like, oh, I got to start fitting into, and I spent a lot of my life trying to like not fit into boxes, but this was, you know, the first time that another life, another human, you know, another part of me had something to do with it, you know, where it was like, oh, I'm making decisions that don't just affect me. It affects like my family and my kin. And so, I really was questioning the system hardcore by then and decided to have a home birth. We had a home birth and it was just like down the rabbit hole after that. You know, it was like, okay, I'm going to question the birthing industry. Okay, I'm going to even question my doula that was trying to like shove things down my throat and tell me to do this and do that. My midwife, rather, sorry. My doula was amazing. But yeah, like, you know, that was still connected very much to like the medical industry and you know, you don't know and you don't know the things you don't know, right? And so then I think I was started a journey of really just questioning things. And when my son was really young living in New York, you know, people are like, oh, what school are you going to put him in? Oh, you got to sign up, you know, for the pre-K list 2 years in advance. And, you know, we had done this home birth and we were like, actually, we want to do things really differently. We're going to question things. And so my son has never been to conventional school. What has happened is I, like Becca, basically like, you know, ended up running my own program and I was a parent of and then co-founded and then kind of took on a new wing, like a new version of an agile learning center in New York, of which my son was a part of. And it was very much like we were unschoolers that were part of this agile learning community. And then I ended up co-directing that and my son didn't even want to go. And so he was, you know, I ended up directing this program and he was not even interested in it. And so fast forward, the pandemic hit. I was stalking Becca for a while because we had this Swedish, you know, connection and we were both in the ALC world and I was coming to Mexico because I just love it here. It's like one of the places that I've always felt really free and connected to. And when it was like right before the pandemic, like a few months before the pandemic, that I was here on a trip and we finally got together. And that's where, you know, she had a community and was also, I think, in a stage of like, you
I was
know,
burnt out again.
yeah, you were burnt
I
out
was like, take the
again.
keys.
Yeah. She's like, I'm just looking for somebody to take the keys. And I was like, that could be me, but I'm like co-directing this program in New York, like that's not going to work. And then I returned to New York and the pandemic hit and I was like, oh hell no, I'm not going to be here. This is bonkers.
Great decision to
And
leave.
yeah. And luckily, like both my, you know, because we're unschoolers, so we don't really answer to anybody except to ourselves and our life. And so we looked at each other, we were like, let's get out of here. And so we came to Mexico. And yeah, and then the rest is kind of history from there. We Beck and I ended up working together to kind of I don't know, evolve the program that was here, which is now in another version of it. It's called Explore Agile Learning Community, and it's kind of like a pop-up immersion program for unschoolers, world schoolers, you know, anybody that wants to live life outside of school and also jump into deschooling work, like parents that want to do that work. And so when we got together, our love for questioning the system and for developing new ways of relating to young people was kind of what brought us together. And that's how radical learning was birthed and born.
Wow, incredible journey. And now you offer your program in Mexico, and do you also offer online programs as well for parents and families?
Yeah, we do. We have different programs. We have once a year a deeply deschooling group coaching program that runs 4 months. starting in October, goes from October to January. So that's like once a year, which is amazing. And then we have also a facilitation support program also that runs once a year from January to June, for facilitators that are working in self-directed educational environments. And then we also have like a pre-recorded self-study online course. And yeah, we have a
And
practice room.
I mean, our like favorite thing to do is this on this like in-person e-schooling
Oh,
intensive. It's like a
yes.
7-day in-person jam where we just put a lot of tools into practice to like radically shift the ways that we think about and relate to young people and embrace this life without school.
Yeah.
Because as I'm sure you know, and other listeners listening that live life without school, it's like there are a lot of fears and a lot of conditioning that we have internalized from systems of power that we're trying to step away from. And it's so easy to like recreate those same systems if we aren't vigilant about unpacking what they are and how and why we need to do things differently. And so it takes practice and it takes awareness. And so that's the stuff that we really love to do. And so it was kind of like, we're passionate about this, we love this, like come on, anybody that wants to do this with us.
That's amazing. And it's so big. Like the work is relentless and we need support. We like our unschooling communities need people like you that can hold that space for that unraveling to happen, because it is relentless. And it's not something like you get to a certain point and then suddenly you're de-schooled and you're free. It's like every time, as your child grows, it like activates another layer of conditioning. And it's
Yeah,
seriously
totally.
such a massive, it really, like, for me personally, made me aware of how traumatized we all are from going through that system, and that we are kind of in this like perpetual trauma response. And doing the work is so big. And yeah, so thank you for everything that you offer to the world in that way, because yeah, things are radically shifting. And I think more and more parents now are really trying to find people like yourselves and people that they resonate with to support them to lean into something different for them and their family. I'd really love to speak to you both about unschooling and neurodivergence, because that's a topic that I haven't really explored on the podcast yet, but I think that that's a massive reason why a lot of parents are looking to outside of the system. Because their children have neurodivergence. And yeah, obviously the system just doesn't really support that whatsoever. But there's not very many resources that I've come across. So I'd love to hear a little bit about that and your journey with that and what you offer as well.
I don't know if I mentioned that my son is also neurodivergent. It's something that has unfolded in the deschooling process of recognizing how long we have been trying and fighting against his natural way of like it's just who he is as a person, and even though I'm on this path and we've been unschooling since forever, like since when he was born basically, I still recognize that it has taken me, and it actually taken me like getting to know Becca and through the different learning communities to really recognize his neurodivergence. And so this is something that I love talking about. But yeah, I'll just leave that and I'll let you jump in first.
I mean, I always knew that my son was different. I could see that he was developing in a different way. But I don't know why it never occurred to me that he could be on the spectrum. I mean, there were so many clear signals. And I did not have any support around me. So I could see all those things and I noticed them. And it wasn't like I was in denial. I was just not connecting the dots. And when finally I did, he was going to start first grade. And it just didn't work as it did for other kids. He spent his days underneath his desk. And the teacher was super sweet. She, like found puppets and gave all the kids puppets so that they could talk through the puppets. And that's when he started talking. because he's clearly still selective mutism is something that he has. And so if he doesn't feel safe, he's not going to say a word. And but the puppet made him speak, and then he didn't stop. And then it was like a monologue for a long time. And that's in that time that we realized that, of course, he was on the spectrum. In those days, it was called Asperger's syndrome. Today, people don't use that term any longer. We don't really care. What is important to us is understanding his strengths and his weaknesses so that we can support him better. And had I fully understood the whole thing, and had I had a really like a broader perspective of the options instead of school, I thought it was only like school or homeschool, then I could have made some different choices. But because of my ignorance and lack of experience in those days, I didn't know how to support him better. I thought that, and that is also what came to me, what people were saying, that he needed to learn how to adapt to the system. And it pissed me off all the time. I was like, why does he need to learn to adapt when clearly there's nothing wrong with him, but the system isn't working for him? So why does he have to adapt? Why can't the system adapt to him? And I think that that is my biggest criticism, not the biggest, but one of the biggest criticisms I have towards the school system, is that it is forcing kids to adapt to a specific mold, like as if that mold was the only way to be, the only way to learn, the only way to do things. And our neurodivergent kids are struggling anyway. And why make it harder for them? Why not learn to adapt to them instead of forcing them to adapt to us?
Yeah, that's so powerful to say that. And what I've noticed here in Australia, and I'm sure it's similar in other parts of the world, is that the support that comes into the school doesn't support them to be free in their expression. It's supporting them to mold. And so, yeah. You know, I worked as a artist in residence in schools for a while. And what I saw was they had these like sensory rooms and these like segregated places where like, it just made no sense to me. I was like, oh, this, it just, it cannot work. You know, that system can't coexist with a neurodivergent like brain person. And it's, yeah, and there's no other options, unfortunately, other than unschooling. And it's really hard, I think, for a lot of parents to reimagine their life, to be able to be with their children and support them in that way. It's a bit murky. I feel like it's changing. It's pretty changing pretty quickly, but yeah, to exit that space is difficult for people at this stage, I think. And yeah, I don't know. It sucks, and it's not helping anyone. And our neurodivergent kids are amazing. Like there's,
oh my gosh. Yeah.
And
yeah, I mean, the system crushes them. That's the truth. They lose their self-esteem. They lose their creativity. They lose their connection to their essence. They think that there's something wrong with them, and there's nothing wrong with them. There's something profoundly wrong with the system who can't recognize that diversity is the way this planet, our ecosystem, including us, thrives.
You know, I just had a thought, actually, and it's the first time I'm going to say this. Sometimes in these podcasts, in these conversations, I'm like, oh, I have this new thought, which is, of course, the systems are the systems, and many of these systems don't work, and we know why they don't work. You know, they're made for it to work for a few, not most. But actually, I'm just like, it's not the systems, it's the people that make the systems. Right? Yeah. Like, we make these systems. We human beings make these systems. And so it's wild, because, you know, I lived in a neighborhood in New York that everybody would have died to live in, because it was like, it had like the best school right around the corner. You know, like, people change their entire lives, right? They move, they get new addresses, they, like, you know, lie about their addresses just to be able to get to like these really good schools. And we happened to live near one, right? And I went and I visited when my son was an infant, and I walked in. And I immediately, talk about trauma response, I immediately just felt so constricted and like I was in a prison. And then they were talking about like how if people are late, if families are late, they have to, you know, like they're get put on a list and then they go to the detention. And this is like pre-K, right? This is like little young humans. And I immediately I was like, yeah, that's gonna be us like every fucking day because we can't be at a school at 8 a.m. That's not gonna work for my kid. That's not gonna work for us. Like that, we're night owls, you know? And so of course I kept like, you know, went on this tour and I walked out in tears. And I knew then that what had been created by other humans was not our language, was not our sauce, was not aligned with us. And I didn't quite have the words, or I didn't know why. I just said, this is not going to work for Sai. And so as he grew, you know, and he grew up, and then it was, you know, like the camps and the, you know, the soccer teams and like all the things that are part of the quote unquote like normal life that you do with families. Every single thing that we were a part of, there was like an issue, right? And there was an issue with my son because he didn't want to stay on the lines. He didn't want to draw in in the lines. He didn't want to, you know, that was always the feedback. Like he doesn't pay attention. He doesn't want to listen. He doesn't, but when he was into like my son didn't crawl. He started walking at 9.5 months. And some people were like, that there, what's wrong with him? He should be crawling, you know, instead of like, oh, he has somewhere to go.
Yeah, he's
He's like really
free. He's like,
determined. He's free. But his freedom was labeled as a problem and an issue for so long. And I didn't know what I know now. And I definitely was like worried. And I definitely tried to make him fit in. And I, you know, definitely was not the parent that I am right now, right? In the beginning, because I just didn't know. And then when I one day said, like, fuck this. Like, I'm going to just focus on him and who he is as a person and help him grow and listen to him and like really let him take the lead. It was like, you know what? We're actually not going to be part of this because it doesn't work for us. Not like it, he's there's something wrong with him. It became, yeah, this doesn't really work for us. There's
And that
actually
would
something
just,
wrong about this for us.
yeah, and that would just eliminate so much stress from your life as well, you know, trying to fit into this like system as a parent. And yeah, just it's so stressful for parents out there whose children are neurodivergent and they're spending so much of their energy just like stressing out about how each day is going to go and how each process is going to go and each experience is going to go. And yeah, when we just take a step out of that space and tune into who our children truly are, it's a whole other level of existence. It's profound, actually.
Yeah,
And
it
I
goes
think it,
from,
yeah,
yeah,
it's
sorry,
scary. It's
it
just,
is
it's scary
scary.
to take that leap, but it's so liberating.
Yeah, because on one hand, you have stigma. Your kid is being stigmatized, you as a parent are being stigmatized, and moving from that place to acceptance and just being able to relax in who we are is very liberating.
And I think that, you know, we talk a lot about this being liberation work. And I think for me, what has been extremely liberating has been letting go of what other people think of me, you know, like letting go of caring what other people think of me. And we get that from schoolishness. We get that from the conditioning, right? Because it's like in school and in, you know, 9 to 5s and in corporate America and like all the things that so many of us have been conditioned to like search and look after and move towards, you have to be what you're told to be. And there I am as a mom who had already started this path when I was like, yeah, I'm not going to do that, you know. I'm going to do birth a different way. I'm going to do, you know, like healthcare a different way. I'm going to do the, you know, I still found myself with conditions. And so it, for me, it's like there came a point where I had to like like really, I owe this journey to my kid, because he was the one who so boldly said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not like, I'm not going to show up and stand in line because they're asking me to, because I can't, and I don't want to, and it doesn't work for me. And so I remember the day that, you know, as somebody that had, you know, this learning space, and he just didn't want to be there. I remember asking myself, like, why am I even in this space that I'm trying to
Yeah,
create
totally.
That is free? He still doesn't want to go. So why am I just let him do it? Let him go. Let him go. Let it go. Let whatever I think is going to happen, or the fears that I'm holding on to, or the concerns about if people are going to think I'm a good enough parent, or let that go. And that was just so liberating.
It's actually so brave. I just, yeah, I honor you in both of you for having the courage to take those big leaps, because it is so brave when you live in a community, in a culture where that is just so blinded by this, the normalization of living in that way. And it is hard to break free, even if your intuition is screaming at you to break free. It does take a lot of courage and bravery to take that step. I really love how you speak to the homeschool to unschooling pipeline. I'm a listeners know I'm a birth keeper as well, and it is such a thing, and it's really fascinating because, and I've experienced it myself too. You know, and I witness women, you know, they'll be living life in a certain way, and suddenly they'll birth in sovereignty and everything changes. And there's so much in that. And it's like, obviously not the only pathway to unschooling. There's many, many pathways to unschooling, but this is definitely something that I witness regularly. And it's like, they experience this level of like sovereignty that is just untouchable, and there's no going back from there. And I feel like when you make the decision to really fully embrace an unschooling existence, it's the same thing. It's like, once you see, you cannot unsee. And that's where the liberation is. And we return to such a harmonious state of being when we are in that space. And it's, it's truly profound what we as parents can learn about ourselves and remember about ourselves, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm sure
Yeah.
You
I
have
think,
experienced that also.
Yeah. Yeah, I think really, like, society and school disconnect us from our true essence. It disconnects us from who we are, from our intuition, from trusting ourselves. And when we start reconnecting to that, there is no going back.
Yeah.
And some will have that like transformative experience, as you're like describing through free birthing, and others will do it in other ways. And maybe it's more like a step by step, or it's going to be a big thing too, but you can't go back after that.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Even if sometimes you want to go back, sometimes you're like,
yeah,
this is so hard. Why can't I just go back? It's funny. I used to feel that sometimes. I don't very often anymore, but it creeps in sometimes. I'm like, oh my God, this is like, it's such a big unplugging. But yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I know people think
amazing.
Like, oh, it's so, oh, you get, I don't know. Some people that have no idea about unschooling, either they think like I'm totally crazy, you know, I'm like harming my child, or they think that I'm like, I don't know, sitting back, like with my legs kicked up, like drinking a martini. Yeah, I don't know. Like there's just such
it's
wild
so interesting, the
interpretation
that people have of unschooling. And it's like, people just don't feel safe to be free. That's what it comes down to. They don't feel safe to just be fully expressed or meet people in their truth, or meet their children in their true expression, because they don't know how to do that themselves. I'd love to, for you.
Because they probably, you know, many of us haven't had that opportunity, you know, to do that ourselves or to be seen. I mean, so much of what I think we're talking about is just leaning into our shared humanity, you know, like all the other stuff, like the work and the, you know, the future planning and, you know, the what ifs and the school, like that's all that's all like busy work. Like that's all stuff that exists outside of who we truly are, like what our nature is, and nature itself. And I think that what I hear you saying, you know, in terms of this remembering, like I really appreciate that word. It's a word that we use a lot too, because it's a lot of the stresses and stressors and a lot of the things that, as you were talking about, Becca, that disconnect us are not natural. Like they are man-made. And that's why earlier I said like the systems were made by people. And so I think, you know, a big part of our work is also understanding like, what are those systems? Why were they put in place? How do they affect people? How have we internalized like oppressive ways of being to ourselves and to each other? And so it also goes very much beyond like, oh, I want to be free. It's like, no, I want you to be free. I want, you know, I want all people to be free. And I think that that's another layer to unschooling as well, because many times people enter unschooling because they're like, oh, fuck this. Like, I'm not gonna do what Uncle Sam is telling me to do, or like, this doesn't feel natural, or my kid is showing me that they want something else and I want to lean into it. And then for us, at least, it's been like, oh, this is really tied to liberation work in a very deep and different way. That is not just about like, let me do what is best for my family. It's like, how can we all remember? How can we all tap in? And why is it that some have more ability to do that in this world and others don't, you know? So it's very related to, you know, social justice work for us. And once you start digging deep, you know, then it becomes like a, like, oh, we got to change stuff because our kids are in for a very crazy future right now if we don't support all of us right now.
Yeah. Thank you so much for speaking to that. There is this really common perception that people that unschool just come from privilege and they're just doing it because they're rich and they have money. And like, I call bullshit on that massively. There is an element of that that exists for sure. But I mean, that exists everywhere. When you dig deeper, like, you know, these systems were formed by people who had an agenda. And I love it when people speak to unschooling as social justice work, because we are actually like removing ourselves and supporting people to return to and remember how to live in community away from that agenda. And it's a real like kind of energetic frequency thing, in my opinion. And we're coming home to a more harmonious frequency when we detach from that, which is like in alignment more with the natural rhythms of the earth and humanity. And yeah, and it is social justice work. And I hope that, you know, people listening can understand that a bit deeper from listening to you speak about that and yeah, feel called to kind of ask more questions around that specifically.
Yeah. And I think that that can be really scary for folks, because there's so much like, there's so much controversy and like language policing, and it can be really off-putting. But I think that if we look at like, what is the goal of what we're doing here, you know, is if we're talking about liberation, we have to talk about liberation for all people. And that means we have to unearth like, what is it that we're walking away from, and look at all of the nasty things under that. And I will say that I don't think that unschooling is available for everybody, like a possibility for everybody. I do think that there are like marginalized identities in the world that have a much, like, I'll say it's harder to access support. It's harder to access, you know, if you're like a single mom, period. If you're a single mom, period. I'll just leave it like that. That's already harder than if you're coupled, you know, and then add on like, you know, other marginalized identities, then it makes it harder. Does it make it impossible? No. But I appreciate what you're saying about community, because I think that, the more of us that say, hey, there's something fishy going on here. Like, I'm not signing up for that. Like, you know, I want something else for my family. The more of us that do that and come into community, the more that we can, you know, lean on our natural capacity to support one another, like our natural, like who, like our natural, like humanness, where it's like, oh, I can support you. You could support me, mutual aid. But it takes like a reckoning of where we are right now in history and, how we can support one another to be able to do that.
And a relearning, I think, or a learning in general of how to exist in community, because I feel like, you know, a lot of people romanticize the village and they're kind of attaching to maybe like ancient ideas or like ideas of the village that don't exist anymore. And we're living in this modern society with our village. A lot of people's villages are online. Like, there's lots of different ways that the village can be expressed. And it's, learning how to exist in community or what community looks like and feels like to you is a really big thing. And I think I love that about unschooling, because it kind of forces you to create community. Because you actually can't do it without community, but it's also scary for a lot of people who haven't grown up in any type of healthy community. And I wouldn't call school by any means a healthy community, but that's kind of what most people's imprinting is, right? That was for me. I was from kindergarten to grade 12 and then university, and that was my idea of community. And it wasn't actually until I went and lived in remote Central Australia with Pintabi people, First Nations people, that I actually saw what a community is. And I got culture shock. I was like, whoa, okay. I don't know anything about this. I need to actually like do the work to find community.
We talk about this as the missing link in self-directed education, culture creation. Because it's really hard, even if we're just talking about the family system, but it can also be like a community or it can be a learning center. The culture that is created can either be created in a very unconscious way by basically using the same structures and patterns that we were brought up with from our own schooling, or we will have to understand what is so dysfunctional with that kind of unhealthy culture. Why is it like the way it is? And what tools are being used in order to disempower people on a daily basis? And how can we learn how to create culture in a more conscious way? And so, we do talk a lot about this, and that is actually what we do in that. I mean, in every offering that we have, our goal is always to create a conscious culture. However, it is easier when you are in person with people and you can like practice in a very real way.
Thank you for sharing that experience, Amy Lou, with the Indigenous folks of your land. I think it's like really, really important to understand that what we're doing is not new.
It's not new.
And no. And we have a lot to learn. We have a lot to learn from not just Indigenous folks, but our elders. And I also mean that in a way that I think it's like, we also can't like fake it, you know, it's not like, oh, okay, I'm going to observe this thing and then I'm going to do it. You know,
because it doesn't apply to our culture.
Exactly.
But we can observe something and know that it's true and and then whatever that activates within us, we can create from a space of our own truth. But that's so fucking hard sometimes, because we've been so disconnected from our own expression of truth and the truth of our communities.
For me, like that, what I'm thinking of right now is that word remembering, because we all have a connection to the land. Like we all have a connection to nature. And like so much of our work, like our personal deschooling work, is very much about like, yes, we talk about the systems and all of that, and we get nitty gritty and we look at school wounds and we look at all the things. But like for us as humans, it's about reconnecting to our intuition. It's about like, you know, understanding the fields of information that is called life in a really different way than we have ever been like had access to because of all of these conditionings. Yeah. And it is a remembering of that. And so I think we're living in like a really, really important time in history where it's like we're reckoning. Like that's a word that somebody has shared with me recently. Like we're reckoning. We're reckoning where we are right now in history. We're reckoning like what our relationship is to culture. You know, we're reckoning what where we've come from and who our ancestors are. And yeah, it's like very deep spiritual work.
It really and, truly is.
Yeah.
And I think it's also about removing ourselves from that idea of humanity being the crown jewel of creation and understanding that we are part of nature. It's like, yeah, we can connect with nature, but through the understanding, the deep understanding that we are part of nature.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a beautiful thing to not have to, you know, living outside of a school system and being together as a family in nature. I was saying to my partner recently, I was like, when I'm alone with my children in nature, I feel like I'm embraced by the womb of creation. And we are all like, yeah, it's profound. I'm very privileged to live in a really beautiful place where there's an abundance of like incredible nature surrounding us. So we spend a lot of time in nature, and I just have these like overwhelming moments where I'm like, this is everything right now. This is all that matters, is that we're in nature. And my children are having a conversation with a butterfly, and I'm sitting on this warm rock that's like, I don't know, it's just so profound but so simple and so normal. And yeah, it's everything. And it's so radical. That idea is so radical. Oh, she just, you know, she's in nature with her kids. Her kids should be doing this and this and this and this. But it's just so untrue, that way of thinking. Being with nature is true. Yeah, I love what you just said.
Yeah, we've been like really leaning into, I mean, radical learning, right? Like this idea of what is radical, and that there's a wonderful liberation worker. Her name is Christiana Smith. She's just coming out with this book, Harvesting Chaos, like seed packets for liberation. I just want to give her a shout out. Right. Go get it. It's like, whoa, it's like new world thinking, you know, like we need new language for things, for the world that we're creating. And Christiana definitely has a beautiful way of expressing that. But she talks about there being two definitions of radical, one being like doing things differently than the norm, which we can say we're doing, right? And then the other is like grabbing things by their root, which is definitely like our approach to things, and like looking at like why we're here to begin with, right? Mm. Because we can, and like, and what are the things that have led us to this point, and to do things where we're changing that root cause of what is fundamentally, and I don't like to say the word wrong very often, but I will say it here, like what is fundamentally wrong with the ways that we are in relationship to ourselves, to each other, and to the earth. Mm. And yeah, it's, I think we can try to step away from things and go out and do things on our own in like a really liberating way. But like, if we're not changing the root causes of why, what's wrong, what's fundamentally wrong with what's happening, then things can just keep going, you know?
So and true. Yeah. And I do witness, and I'm guilty of it myself. You know,
yeah, same.
perpetuating cycles of like schooled mindsets in the home, because, you know, I'm still unraveling. There's nothing wrong. Like, it's just happens. It's part of the process, right? But yeah, you just get, I guess you get better at like recognizing when it's playing out, so you can like, you know, sever that cord as it's happening. But yeah, it's that's, we're kind of in this, on this front line, I suppose, of moving into this new paradigm, and our children are leading us. Like, it's profound to just tune in to the children in my community when I'm feeling confused or I'm feeling some, you know, school trauma activated. I now just like tune into them, and they're just doing it. They're just living. They're just in, they're connected. There's no, and I'm like, okay, you know, they're our biggest teachers. And I feel like that's the essence of what unschooling is, right? It's just tuning into our children in as themselves.
And yeah, I think you're saying
that back to us.
Yeah, there's something very important in what you're saying. I think that often when you become a parent, and many people that have been parents for a long time, they have this idea that it's our role to kind of show the kids the way. And I really truly believe that it's the other way around. The kids come here to teach us and to show us the way.
Yep. Absolutely, completely agree with you on that one. And it's a big journey to step out of that mindset. It's a big journey not to be affected by other people's projection of that mindset as well, because, you know, you can step out of it yourself and then you've got all of this noise around you. That can be challenging as well. And so it's definitely, you know, not for the faint-hearted doing this work, but it is so incredibly healing.
Yeah, I
liberating
think,
and healing. Yeah.
Yeah. What I was going to say is, you know, we talk a lot about this, that there are a lot of times people are like, okay, the conventional system isn't working. Okay. Like this, there's craziness happening in the world right now. I'm going to do something different. And then like, I think that there's like a huge opportunity for parents that end up choosing a different path to begin to advocate for youth liberation, right? Like there's like a point where it becomes like, oh, I'm doing this because I think this is what we need as a family. And like what we're talking about right now is actually like, I'm going to step aside and let my kids just live their life. Yeah. Of course, like we're here to, you know, like not abandon our children, but there's something to be said about like this idea that kids don't know better, that I definitely was raised with, whereas the embracing a life without school is like saying kids know a whole lot and we actually have a lot to learn from them.
Yeah.
You know, they help us remember. They help us remember all the things that we're saying and we're talking about right now. And so yeah, I've found that that's something that has been like a huge motor for me for my unschooling and deschooling journey, has been to, like you said, like I'm guilty of it too. Like I have my schoolish moments all the time where it's like fear. It's always fear that kicks in and concern about like, what, you know, what's going to happen or what are people going to think, or fear of the future. But when I really lean into, okay, am I acting in a way that is supporting my kids' agency and autonomy right now? Or am I, like you say this beautifully.
I do.
Yeah. Like, is it life enhancing? Like, what I'm doing, like enhancing
that.
Their life?
Yeah.
Or is it, you know, like pulling them down in a way?
Yeah.
Yeah. That fear frequency is like so major. I did a podcast with Lucy Aitken Reed, and she, it was really great. And she spoke to this and she said the fear is like, will my child be a, you know, successful member of society, is like a big thing that comes up. And she's like, but what society, like what successful society are we speaking about? You know? And when she said it like that, for me, I was like, that really landed. I was like, well, yeah, I don't really want to exist in that sick society. I don't want my children to be primed to exist in that, or groomed to exist in that sick society, or the real world, or whatever people want to call it. And yeah, the way she spoke to it was really profound.
Yeah. Yeah. She has a lot of so much wisdom.
Yeah.
And years of listening to her young people too.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to have to wrap it up. I could talk to you both all day. I feel like I need to, I meet this so many amazing people through this podcast.
Oh, that's amazing.
I do have one more question though. I guess on your journey, especially you, Becca, you've been on this journey for quite some time. I'd love to hear what you, if you've noticed any significant changes, like culturally around unschooling and deschooling, and just what you've witnessed, because I haven't been doing it for that long. My oldest child's only 9, and I feel like I only fully embraced it in the last few years, and broke through those layers. And even in that short amount of time, I've noticed such a big change in people's understanding of school and schooling, and, you know, things are popping up all over the place. So I'd love to hear from your perspective as somebody that's been on the path for some time.
Yeah, thank you for asking. I will add to the conversation that I have been working for a long time now in Latin America to as a leading voice of self-directed education, because there is hardly no information in Spanish. And it becomes very, to me, it becomes like a question of democracy and like the right to access information. So I started many years ago producing content in Spanish, because I knew that there were unschoolers out there, but they're very, very few. In Latin America, I would say that they keep being few, but it is growing. Something is happening. It's just going very slowly. And when it comes to Europe, specifically Sweden, my birth country, I have also been working for many years now as an advocate for dropping the law of mandatory schooling, so that there can be more options for kids, because we have so many school wounded kids in Sweden that are called school refusers, which is a really, it's the wrong term. It's not at all what it is about. They're just very school wounded. And nothing happens on the surface. You can't see any changes really, but there's like a slight shift in consciousness and awareness for some people. And I see the word school wound appear more. And I see more and more people being open to the idea of dropping mandatory schooling. People still don't get what unschooling is, but journalists are contacting me, and not with the attitude of like, this is crazy, this is some kind of religious fanatic movement, but you're rather like, tell me more. Yeah, it's a cult. And you know, like, the, yeah, how they often try to paint homeschoolers as religious people who won't let their kids access reality and the real world.
Yeah.
And this is so like the contrary, because to me it's school that shuts kids out of and from reality. They don't have the right to actually participate in life until they're 18. And so I can see that shifts are happening, and I think that when the pandemic hit, there was a big shift happening in the States, where many, 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 many things are happening right now that I'm not going to talk about, because I'm not from there, but that I can see that things are moving. But I also see that the resistance towards unschooling is huge, and that in Europe, there are countries where you can do it, but there are also countries where they're narrowing down the possibilities, like France. Yeah, you could illegal, always unschool, right? In France. It's not illegal, but now it's more like homeschooling.
True.
And so in Finland, they also used to have more like an unschooling attitude. And now, no, it has to be homeschooling. Right. There's like this. And I guess it's so much part of these times where there's this push and pull between control and sovereignty. Like,
yeah,
it's that movement that we can see in all areas of life.
Yeah. And I guess, like, how willing are you to stay sovereign? despite all of the authority. Like
it's
probably pretty scary for some people when that are in places like that. Thank you for speaking to that. Yeah, it's even here, it's pretty chill in Australia, but there are some states that are trying to tighten the reins. And you can see that, you know, they're doing it because more and more people are choosing different pathways, you know, other than school. Yeah, so that push-pull, I think, is probably going to amplify for a while. But yeah, people are definitely rising and making different decisions. And it's because of people like you and the internet and sharing and really showing people that there are other options, especially for young people who are neurodivergent. I think that's a really massive one, because school refusal, I just heard of that term not that long ago. Like, it's an actual thing. Oh, he's a school refuser.
Yeah.
It was sickening.
And it's ridiculous.
I was like, what the hell does that even mean? Like, they just don't want to go because it's traumatizing. Like, they're not doing anything. Yeah.
And it's not even about wanting. Many of them want to go because that's what society tells them, and all their friends are going. They can't go.
Many
are neurodivergent, and many are just very creative, initiative taking humans that have no outlet for that in the school system.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm going to just say one thing. If that place that I had described earlier, that school, if I had walked in and I had been met by like open, warm, caring humans that actually took time to like have conversations that were heartfelt and meaningful and real, and, you know, like got down, you know, to kids, like literally with their bodies, like came down to talk to kids, you know, and all the things, like maybe it would have been an awesome place for my son if they could see him and be like, yes, Sai is, you know, has different needs and we're going to adapt. And so I just want to say, like, it's, I think what we all want, like what I want as a parent, is just a place and people that can honor my son for who he is and not force him to be somebody else.
Yeah.
Now, I think more and more and more, as people like us are taking our lives, like reclaiming our lives, there is, like what you're saying, there's opposition to that. You know, there are governments and there's politics involved and there's policies that are trying to change that. And I think that it's really, really important. Like, I was just recently in an environment with people that thought really differently than I did. And a part of me was like, what the hell am I doing here? These are not my people.
Yeah.
And then I said, no, I got to show up. I got to show up and speak my truth.
Yeah.
And do it in a way that actually models the way of communicating that we're like advocating for, right? Yeah. Heart-centered, human-centered. And I have to show up in these spaces and ask these questions and speak my truth, because if not, then who knows what's going to happen. And so I share this because what we're saying is true and it's happening. And if we don't show up, if we don't speak our truth, if we don't ask the questions, if we don't radically change things, then we're in trouble. Like, we're all in trouble. And I'm not like, I don't want to be like that Debbie Downer negative person, but I think that it's like, if we really want to like support our future generations to have a very different future, then we must, like, it is our responsibility to show up and speak up.
Oh, and I would like to add to that, that it's also about how we do it, so that we don't replicate those patterns that we dislike, like those power over dynamics, like debate and argumentation and judging. Like, no, like to come into conversations and dialogues with people with openness and empathy and compassion.
And instead neutrality is really powerful in these spaces, because we're meeting somebody in a I guess a conversation in an energy, and when we're neutral, we can both expand.
Absolutely. And the anger needs to go. There is a lot of anger, and rightfully so, but it's not helpful.
Yes, I totally agree with you. And I think it's oh, there was something in my mind just then that I was going to say, but it's totally slipped. I'm just like, yeah, I'm nodding. I'm in total agreeance with you. Our children are going to inherit a world that we can't even fathom. Things are changing and moving, and whoa, it's like there is a dark and sinister force that is out there, that is beyond my comprehension, but it's there. And so speaking out and really claiming something else is like so powerful, and it feels so natural and easy in a lot of ways, but the ripple effect of that is profound and very powerful. And so thank you for speaking to that. It's
Yeah, and I think, you know, to remember to be light in both senses, be light.
I think that's the beauty of like tuning into our children. They help us come home to play and curiosity and lightness and joy and just like being free in our emotions. It's not even just joy all the time, just like that freedom to just be. Yes. Oh, that's such a beautiful place to end the conversation. Oh, thank you so much. I would love if you could share where the listeners can find you and engage with your offerings, because I'm sure a lot of people are feeling inspired by everything you've shared today.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having us. It's just really beautiful to have these conversations. So we're on Instagram at radical_learning. We're on Facebook, Radical Learning Talks.
We have the podcast.
Oh yeah,
Radical Learning Talks.
Radical Learning Talks.
And is that on Spotify and Apple Podcasts?
Yes, it's everywhere where it has to be.
Yeah, and we have a bunch of stuff going on. So yeah, if you're looking to dive into deschooling work, and you know, our work is very much about like not just talking, but actually practicing. So let's play, right? Like we're talking about play being like a tool and a way to move us forward. Let's not talk about it. Let's do it. And so we have a lot of different ways that parents, adults supporting youth, educators, facilitators, anybody that wants to dive into this work. We're here.
Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And I'll link everything as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks for the work you're doing as well. It's really important and fun. And I think there's so many different perspectives to unschooling. Not all of it has to do with school, right?
Yeah.
And also just wonderful to be able to connect across the globe.
Yeah.
I mean, we can look outside the window and over there is the Pacific Ocean and, you know, wave to you.
Yeah, literally. I'm like not far from the ocean here. I actually looked on the map the other day and I'm like, it feels like it's just over there, but Australia is very, very, very far from the rest of the world. But yeah, thank you. It's been such a pleasure. And I'm so excited to continue
witnessing
all of the amazing content and offerings that you put out into the world. It's truly inspiring. It's always such a pleasure to talk to fellow unschoolers from across the world. If you liked what you heard, you can follow us on all major streaming platforms or on Instagram at the.school.free.life.